even like one or two glasses of wine will disrupt your sleep significantly, especially as we get older.
What about if we day drink?
Right. Yeah, I was gonna ask, is there a time cutoff to that wine drinking?
Welcome to Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. I'm Maury Fontanez.
And I'm Melissa Grushka.
And today we have a very special guest. Lauren Hauser, who is an integrative nurse practitioner, is here to talk to us today. Bean, you ready?
Love it.
Hey, Signal listeners. Before we get on with this week's episode, I wanted to take a second and just share a quick personal message with you. Many of you know that I have written a book that comes out in March. It's called Higher Self, Reclaiming the Power of Your Intuition. And you can now pre-order this book anywhere that you buy books. We'll put some links in the show notes. This book is my coaching method to help every reader understand exactly how to access their intuition, to feel that they can tap that inner wisdom, and to ultimately feel fully empowered and dignified as your higher self. So I hope that you will take a minute now and pre-order the book. It will make a great gift for friends and family, especially with the holidays coming up. And it will go a long way in supporting me and showing booksellers that there's excitement, which will help the book succeed in the long run. So thank you so much for taking the time to pre-order. And now on with the show. Hi, ladies.
Hi, ladies.
Hi, Lauren, welcome to the pod.
Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
We're very excited to have you. We have 230 questions for you. So I hope you have a lot of time available.
And for regular listeners, I have referenced Lauren many, many times as she is my functional and all of whatever that title was, integrative nurse practitioner of health. Yes, she is mine. And I always, always sing your praises. Always. Oh,
thank you so much.
Well, before we get into it, Lauren, I think we briefed you, but we like to do a little cringe and delight moment before we start, just to catch up on the week. Sometimes Bean and I don't really talk until we're recording. So it has turned into our catch up. So who wants to go first? Anything cringy or delightful? Bean, why don't you kick us off?
Okay, mine's a little depressing. I often do things, Lauren, about the weather here because I feel like it really it really informs our mood on the East Coast. Maury is blessed to be on the West Coast. She doesn't have to deal with such troubles. Anyway, my original delight was going to be that I went walking this morning with my dear friend Chelsea for her birthday, and we were walking through all the foliage, and I thought, oh, it's so beautiful here in the fall, but Maury will be really angry if I use that as my delight. So instead, I'm going to flip it and make it really depressing and discuss in detail what we discussed on our walk, which everyone here can most likely relate to, as we all have daughters, is me and my friend both have 13-year-old hormonal daughters, and we're struggling in our current status with them as we are both very triggered by this age and not knowing how to handle it. Cause I think a lot of it is actually coming from our own stuff. Cause I was a little naughty when I was 13. My daughter is not so naughty, but I'm like constantly feeling, I've been listening to 90s music again. I'm like all in my feels about that age, and it's bringing up a lot, and it's harder to relate to them at this age than 10. And how old's your oldest, Laura?
She'll be 12 in January.
Oh, you're coming up on it, girl.
I really do believe that you get triggered back to the age that your kids are, for sure. Like memories come up when they turn that age that just were hidden and buried, and then you have to relive them, and you have to try not to parent your kids based on those experiences.
That's it. And that's what I think I might be doing, is parenting her based on my own behavior, which was a very different circumstance than what she was living in. I had a sick older sister. It was just a different vibe.
Yeah.
So I feel, and I think my friend is also having the same struggle, and it's really sad and challenging new area of parenting to navigate.
Yeah.
Anyone else got
was that supposed to be cringy or delightful or just depressing?
Cringy and depressing. Cringy that I felt like I knocked it out of the park this whole time being a mom, and then teenagehood hit and I was like, what? Where's the guidebook? How do I figure this out now?
Totally. Well, Lauren, what do you got for us? Hopefully it's a little more uplifting.
I was thinking about this. We do that at our dinner table. We call it high and low.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's such a great practice. My high would be, we just finished, finally, it took 6 months, putting in a basketball court at my house, like a half court for my girls.
Nice. Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah, outside? It's so fun. Outside, we live 10 acres in the woods, so there's not a lot of like playground stuff. So, it, you know, it was a labor of love. My husband really put in a lot of work and planning and
oh, you did it yourself?
Some of it. He put up the basketball net this weekend, which okay. was like an 8-hour adventure, which, you know, almost required stitches.
Oh no.
But it was so fun. And now, like, for the last 3 days, every morning they're like hurrying to get ready for school to go outside and play. And it has a light on it, so when it gets dark, they're out there. And it's something that I like to do. So it's fun to be like, hey, you wanna go play horse? And we'll go out and play. So I'm just excited for all the family memories that it will hopefully bring. Yeah.
That's definitely our 40.
Yes, yes.
So sweet. All right. Well, I will tell you my cringe. This happened to me last night. We were in the kitchen cleaning up after dinner. And, you know, these kids have like sharp ears. I don't think that they always do, but they sure do. And TJ was doing the dishes. My husband is TJ Lauren. And his phone buzzed his phone started ringing. And I picked it up and it was his ex-wife, who is the mother of his children. And, you know, we co-parent our children together, all is well. And I say, why is Quincy calling you? But I think I'm saying it like that. And my youngest from behind goes, not with the attitude, mama.
Oh,
but like, I didn't have any attitude. And TJ's like, thanks, buddy. Good looking out. And I was like, I had no attitude.
Well, check yourself.
But they both swear that I had a little, but I didn't. Why would I? Anyway.
I don't know. Why would you?
So that's my cringe. Just that my kid is all up in my business all the time.
But can I say, though, it's slightly a delight that he had the awareness to say, hey, and felt comfortable enough with you to say, hey, don't say it like that.
But yes, absolutely. I genuinely did not think, because I didn't feel anything when I said it, but he heard it. So I'm going to take him. I'll take him at his word.
You're a good mom.
Thanks. All right. Well, listen, we have Lauren here. Let's not waste her time with this.
Right.
Lauren, I'm going to jump in with the first question, which is just, I would love for you to just describe integrative medicine and functional medicine for people who may not be as familiar with it.
Yeah, I like to say that it is a patient-focused practice. I put a lot of emphasis on the patient-provider relationship. I think that's an essential part of the healing process. And it's evidence-based, you know, it's evidence-based complementary medicine in combination with the best of conventional. So that's why I really like the integrative piece of it, is that I'm taking the best of conventional medicine, evidence-based alternative therapies, you know, patient-centered, and then root cause approach. You know, we're looking at the why your body's sending you these signals and this communication versus just suppressing the symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Which is a real sort of Eastern versus Western mentality, I feel like.
Well, that's what I wanted to get into, is how so? How is, you know, I hear what you're saying, it's patient-centered. So we're starting with the why. But what does that mean then in terms of diagnosis and treatment? How is it different or how is it more integrated than if you're just going to go see your general practitioner?
Yeah, I think in the Western traditional sense, you're looking for a symptom focus, you're looking for a disease state as it arises, and you're typically treating with pharmacologics and surgery.
Yeah.
Whereas an Eastern approach is really looking to optimize health and wellness. It's prevention focused, it's proactive. We're not just looking at physiologic symptoms, but we're looking at emotional health, environmental exposure, spiritual health. All of these play into that whole person. So it's not just our physical piece, but it's also those other components that make us who we are, and also how that impacts our health. It's a huge part.
Yeah.
And I think that's been drastically ignored in a lot of Western medicine. And that's why I feel like getting out of control with our health here is nobody's looking at the whole picture.
And I think there's starting to be a shift. There's certainly an awareness from, you know, media and culture, which I think helps, but I think there's starting to be a shift of, okay, we have to focus on the other aspects of our health. Because we're not, chronic disease is not getting better.
Yeah. Did you start your career in a more traditional pathway and then move into integrative medicine? And how and why did you evolve into that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I was actually came out of nursing school and was a NICU nurse. So I worked with little babies in the NICU. Yeah, which I loved it. Got my master's, and then I started in a primary care practice. And it was just me and the doctor. He was a bit of a cowboy. He wasn't owned by a medical system. He's still my mentor. Love him. And I got to take care of whole communities. So I was seeing, grandkids to grandparents.
Oh, wow.
And I did that for 5 years. Loved it. And then I had my daughter, who my oldest is 12. And I realized the type of care that I was giving, while was very following guidelines and good quality care, was not what I would accept for my own family.
Right.
I couldn't give out another Z-Pak for a viral upper respiratory infection. Right. Like, I just didn't have the tools in my toolkit to help people the way I wanted to help them. And sometimes it's funny, it just takes having your own family to realize, okay, we can do better. So I started to research what else is out there. And I came across the Integrative Fellowship at the University of Arizona, Dr. Weil's program, and it just kind of clicked. So I started reaching out to providers locally who had done the fellowship, and I connected with one, and she kind of acted as a mentor for me, encouraged me to do the fellowship, and then halfway through hired me.
Wow.
So I went from babies to, traditional primary care right into like a full functional medicine clinic.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Which was great experience, awesome experience. And then 6 years ago, I opened my own practice closer to home, where I could, see people in my community and friends and family members, and, really tailor the practice to how I wanted to do it.
Yeah. 6 years ago, that's about when I started. I started right in the beginning.
You did.
I'm so honored. You did. I'm going to fangirl for a minute about Dr. Weil, because Dr. Weil is like, I don't even know. He's like the godfather of integrative medicine. I feel like he's been around since the 90s. My family was pretty into him and all of his supplement packs and everything that he had in the 90s, before people were really doing lots of supplements and enhancing your health in that way. I need you to give me a little bit. I know that's a very prestigious fellowship that you got with him. I don't think he just doles that out so easily. I want to know all the goods. What was it like? What's he like? Are you still in touch with him? Is he still an inspiration?
For sure. So the fellowship was awesome, because it was a 2-year, most of it was online. And then we went out to Arizona for 3 separate weeks. And it was all, I think there's probably 60 in my class, and it was all MDs, DOs, nurse practitioners, and PAs. And it was really experiential. Like, the whole week was, yes, we had lectures, and yes, we were going through those things, but he would bring in all the different other providers for us to experience things. So we had like a leading researcher in mindfulness come and do a mindfulness. We had, Tai Chi practitioners come in. We had acupuncturists come in. We had osteopathics come in. So we got to experience all the different modalities that we often refer to, which was super helpful. Awesome. They also do the whole Mediterranean diet while you're there. So they feed you, which was like,
that alone is such a treat. Yeah,
for sure. Because I think the second time I went, I was pregnant with my second. And the third time I actually brought her. She was like a baby. And I brought my sister, and she kind of watched her while I did my lectures type of thing. So that was awesome. He in general, the thing that impressed me the most was his memory. So he was in his 70s when I was doing my fellowships. I think he's in his 80s now. Wow. And he would come to do a lecture. He had nothing prepared, and be like, what do we want to talk about today? Uh-huh. And they would, and we would vote or whatever. And he'd be like, medicinal mushrooms. And he would speak for an hour, like cite research and go through all the benefits, personal experience, how to use it, without saying or like, it was just amazing how sharp, some people are. And just, evidence-based, kind, and like a visionary, really.
How great to have the opportunity to learn under someone like that.
Right.
What do you feel like when we think about integrative medicine? Does it also include things like Chinese medicine and the way that they think about energy and, the blood system? Like, can you talk a little bit about, does it include Eastern modalities as well?
Sure. I think it depends on what your training is and how you practice. From the integrative approach, I take probably more of the patient-provider relationship, the focus on the emotional health and the spiritual health. I don't have specific training in, you know, Ayurvedic medicine or Chinese medicine. So if I'm going to use those modalities, I refer out to trusted providers. Okay. I lean into the functional medicine approach on kind of the more pathophysiologic side, where I'm looking at systems, you know, what's going on with our microbiome and our gut health? How is our nervous system affected? What's going on endocrine wise? What's going on mitochondrial wise? And really do some advanced assessments, testing, history to get an idea of how all those systems are interacting and could be at play.
I mean, for the record, when I started with her, she was asking me like, what cleaning products are you using at home? I mean, really, really detailed minutiae to really get an understanding of me as a whole patient.
Whole system. Yeah.
Yeah.
What are some things, I'm so curious, like, what are some things you've seen that we sort of misdiagnose or misunderstand? Like, what's a common ailment that is actually attributed to one of those other systems, like your gut health or your mitochondrial health, that we don't think about holistically when we're just have a headache or whatever it might be?
Well, I can use your headache example. That's a good one. So headaches can be so multifactorial. So things that I always assess when someone presents with a headache is one, nutrient deficiencies. Magnesium is a common nutrient deficiency. About 30-40% of the population is low in magnesium. And it's because our soil is depleted. Even if you're buying really high quality food, the content and the amount of magnesium that's in it is lower than what it was in the past.
Interesting.
So, you know, looking for nutrient deficiencies to see if that's a potential cause. So magnesium and then B vitamins and zinc also play a role in something called methylation, which can be altered or off if you don't have those nutrients and can cause headaches. So I would look at nutrients. I would also look at hormones. Certainly some menstrual hormones can affect
problems.
Can affect headaches, as well as blood sugar regulation, which is hormonal as well. And then your adrenal or your stress hormones, looking at cortisol and DHEA to see if they impact headaches. And then I go down, I always am looking at gut as well as a foundational piece. You know, are you reacting to foods? Is that part of it too? So I would explore all those areas with patients in both, you know, asking questions and also potentially testing those things to see if their root cause for the headaches.
Mm-hmm. Lauren is the one who determined that I was gluten intolerant, which completely shifted my entire life, my entire way of living, my entire way of feeling. Like, I had lived, I think, with such chronic internal inflammation for so long that I didn't know outside of it. And she finally diagnosed me as gluten intolerant, and I got off, and I'm like I guess what normal people feel like all the time now. And it still is shocking because I lived so much of my life in that state of pain.
What's the biggest thing you've noticed is different now that you've taken gluten out?
Me?
Yeah.
Definitely pain levels and exhaustion levels. It helped a lot with energy. I mean, I'm tired all the time because of other things, but it definitely helped with energy. And I had chronic back pain my entire life. And right. I have a lot of disc issues in my back. I have a lot of physical ailments, but they're exacerbated. And now when I do like cheat a little and have a little gluten at a meal, I will see within that week, I get sore again. Yeah. My low back starts to hurt. My knee starts to hurt. Things that aren't normally bothering me.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not uncommon. I mean, I think when we think about gluten intolerance, the first thing we think about is GI upset.
Yeah.
But to be honest, most of my patients have more of the brain fog fatigue with gluten and the pain than they do
stomach.
True GI ups. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm curious, you just mentioned the spiritual side, which you and I actually have never really gone into. I'm curious what you mean by that and how you factor that into people's overall health. I agree with it. I'm just curious how you in particular do it.
Yeah, I think I look at it in two ways, you know, looking to make sure the person has meaning and purpose in their life. We know having those two things be forefront of mind and a factor in driving decision making makes you healthier overall, leads to a happier, healthier life. And the other piece would be mind-body practices. I talk to all my patients about mind-body practices, and that can be, you know, I have patients that are very religious, and that's a prayer practice. And I have patients that are more spirituality-based, and that's journaling, that's mindfulness, that's meditation. So incorporating some sort of mind-body practice where you're checking in with yourself, where you're activating your parasympathetic nervous system is just essential for well-being. It makes all the other treatment pieces work better.
Yeah.
Totally. Totally.
We have talked on this show a lot about just the way that stress and trauma affects our physical health. Can you talk a little bit about the parasympathetic nervous system? Sure. Like, what do we need to know about that system and how it affects us both emotionally and physically?
Sure. So the autonomic nervous system has two branches. It has the sympathetic and the parasympathetic. We're all very familiar with what the sympathetic state feels like. That is our fight or flight. Blood flow is diverted away from our GI tract and our reproductive organs, and it goes to our heart and our brain and our muscles to fight the perceived stressors. And it is a chemical response. And it's necessary, right? Like if a car is coming at us, we need to be able to jump out of the way.
Right.
The problem is it's an evolutionary process that maybe no longer serves us the way that our body's using it now. So we have the same chemical response if a tiger is in the room or if we're late for our Zoom meeting.
I know that. Problem. I feel it.
Yeah, you feel that, right? And so we have this rush of adrenaline, we have this rush of cortisol. And when that happens, you know, yes, we're more focused and yes, we're stronger, but the other systems that need that blood flow tend to suffer. So chronic elevation of that sympathetic place can lead to chronic cortisol, which can cause inflammation, it can cause weight gain, it can shift metabolic states, it can mess your hormones up, and it can cause dysregulation or dysbiosis in your GI tract. So that's sympathetic.
That's me.
Yeah, it's all of us, right? We just, yeah, our whole world is so sympathetic driven. From like social media to the news, everything's trying to hit that fight or flight response.
It's working.
It's working for sure. The flip side of that is the parasympathetic nervous system. And that is rest, digest, heal, reproduce. So when we are in the parasympathetic place, we are relaxed. Blood flow goes into our digestive tract. It goes into our reproductive organs. Our body's natural healing mechanisms are able to turn on. We have a whole system of healing internally that needs to be accessed, and it's literally shut off when we're in that sympathetic place. So it elicits all those types of physiologic responses in our body. But we have to practice it. We have to practice getting in the parasympathetic state because of the world we live in now.
That was going to be my question, yeah. Is how does one, because we're all, like you said,
we're
in this state.
Yeah.
How do we more proactively allow time for our bodies to be in that parasympathetic state?
Yeah, I mean, we have to find a practice that we identify with that we can do consistently. And I always say the mind-body umbrella is large, and it can be a lot of different things. And oftentimes it means trying different modalities to find what's a good fit. And it doesn't have to be a lot of time too. I think that's a misnomer. You know, I'm not asking you to sit in the lotus position and meditate for an hour. If you can do that, great. Good for you. I wish I was like that. But I'm like, can we get 5 minutes a day? Even if you're like hiding in the bathroom from your kids, can we do a breathing exercise? Can we listen to a loving kindness meditation? Can we do a gentle yoga practice? Like, what can we do, a prayer service if that's your jam? Or can we do a journaling? Like, we got to do something to elicit that parasympathetic response so that all the hard work, all the good food you're eating, the exercise, the things that you're putting in all this time, effort, and resources can work as well as we need them to be.
Can I ask what you do, what your practice is?
Yeah. So my professor during my fellowship was Dr. Shauna Shapiro. And she's amazing. She has the best voice too. I know if you ever listen to things, that so matters. And she has a great book called Good Morning, I Love You, which I'm not crazy about the title, but especially when I'm like referring it to my male patients, they're like, okay, come on. But it's pretty much like what you practice grows stronger is the message. So if you practice being calm and loving and kind, like that will grow, that muscle will grow. So she has a couple loving kindness meditations on her website and on YouTube that I love. So that's a go-to for me. I also love the 4-7-8 breath.
Yeah.
So that's one that Dr. Weil teaches everybody. And I've seen that do crazy things. Like when I was in primary care, I've had patients, you know, when I would do blood draws, it would pass out every time. And I would guide them through that breath work while the phlebotomist was doing it. And like, they wouldn't pass out. Like crazy stuff where it's like, it really does work.
Calm your nerves. Yeah.
Calm your nerves. Yep. And then I like gratitude journals. I have like the 5-minute journal, which takes, again, 2 minutes a day. I do it in my sauna.
Oh, I want a sauna.
That's a helpful. Yeah, I love my sauna.
What's the science behind, we've done an episode on gratitude, but I'd love to hear your perspective on why does a gratitude journal help so much with the parasympathetic?
Yeah, I think it's because we're focusing on the positive, right? Like even when I was prepping for our interview today and I was like, okay, what's my, what do you call it? Not cringe. What was the other one?
Delight.
Okay. You know, I was going through the day yesterday being like, oh, that could be it. That's delightful. Oh, that could be it. That's delightful. And if you're focusing on the good, you're reinforcing the neuronal connection of that positive pathway. So it's that neuroplasticity of our brain. And we know that we can elicit positive neurotransmitters and, you know, serotonin, norepinephrine, dopamine by just thinking about positive events. So it really does affect our brain chemistry.
Yeah, the power of the mind.
What do you say when, you know, I think I get this question or I hear this question a lot when I like hear about functional integrative medicine, like this misnomer that let's say you're diagnosed with cancer and people will, you know, talk about how there's a woo-woo way of treating it and then there's the medical way. That's not what this is. This is about integrating medicine with these other things. Can you talk a little bit about like if you have a serious medical diagnosis, you know, what are you suggesting is an integrative approach to something that is, you know, foundationally serious to your health?
Yeah, I love that question. And I think you partly answered it there and that it is an integrative approach. I'm never asking patients to choose conventional or integrative. Like the goal is to do both and to work together and collaborate, particularly in serious things like cancer or if you break a leg, like please get conventional care. Like they excel
in
those areas.
Just eat a Mediterranean diet and your leg will heal.
Right. And actually that's one of the things that I really like about my practice and my training is that I'm conventionally trained. I went to Jefferson. I'm a nurse practitioner. I can prescribe. I can order labs. I can interpret them so that I'm not missing something that needs a different level of care or a specialist referral because I'm familiar with kind of the warning signs of things that need more attention. But it doesn't have to be mutually exclusive. You can take a medication and you can also do things that support your immune system, like, you know, eat probiotic foods, increase your fiber, add a probiotic, you know, look at colostrum. So it's about supporting your body through those things. And sometimes that means medication and it means lifestyle, supplementation, diet changes, exercise. It doesn't have to be one or the other. It can and should be both.
Love that. Love, love, love that. I had a couple questions. One, I don't know if you can even answer this. If you can give like three tips that you think are the most vital for well-being.
Okay. Yeah. Sleep.
Oh, yes. So bad. I'm doing so badly at that right now.
Yeah.
Sleep
is
I agree.
A big one. So, you know, avoiding your phones half an hour to an hour before bed, avoiding computers that they're, you know, that is super helpful.
Yes.
Lauren.
Yeah.
People hear that and they're like, sure. And then they don't do it. Can you say why? Why does that matter?
Two big reasons. One, the blue light in a device, any screen, signals to your brain that it's morning time.
Right.
So here you are on the screen, laying in bed, about to go to sleep and telling your brain it's morning. And then you shut it off and you're like, oh, I can't sleep. So that's one piece. The other piece is, as we mentioned before, like social media, news, like they're all sympathetically driven. It's they're trying to clickbait you and grab you in by eliciting a strong emotional response. So those are not relaxing or soothing at a time when you're trying to shut your mind off or slow down those kind of loopy thoughts and try and go to sleep. So I realize an hour is a lot. So I usually start patients like, can you do 20 minutes? Like, can we take like a hot shower before we go to bed? Can we listen to a yoga nidra? Can we do a journal? Can we even like talk to our partner or our spouse or something that's just not screen related?
Yeah.
But start with 15, 20 minutes and then see where you can work up from there. And then caffeine in the afternoon can be a factor for some people. Some people.
Yeah, me. I can't drink after 2. I have found, I've like learned that if I cross the 2 o'clock marker, I have trouble falling asleep.
Yeah. And then alcohol. And it's really cruel because women and alcohol, as we get older, it's, And this, I'm the daughter of a wine salesman. So this comes from a place of like, it's a hard one, but even like one or two glasses of wine will disrupt your sleep significantly, especially as we get older.
What about if we day drink?
Right? Yeah, I was going to ask, is there a time cutoff to that wine drinking?
So, so things that help is, you know, earlier in the evening and with food.
Wait, later in the evening or earlier?
No, earlier. Earlier and with food.
With food. Interesting. Yeah. All right.
Not but as fun, but yeah.
Yeah, less fun.
It's less fun.
Fine, Lauren. I'm bored, but
you
know what?
Maybe you're about to say it, but my functional medicine doctor drills me on this one, is water. Like, can you just talk about the importance of water in our well-being?
Well, I think there's several pieces to that. One is the quality of your water, right? Mm. So making sure you're drinking water that's safe. So I would recommend either getting it tested or having a filtration system in, obviously not drinking out of plastic. Those are, you know, there's a safety factor to that. Then it's quantity. And I think that varies among individuals and medical conditions, but generally getting a solid amount of water is helpful, not only to regulate appetite, prevent headache, things like that. And then the last piece would be electrolytes. I'm a big fan of electrolytes. I think if we drink a shit ton of water with no electrolytes, we just pee a lot.
That's right. That's why I hate doing it.
I love doing it.
It interrupts my day.
And we don't typically feel super hydrated.
Right.
But if we add electrolytes, whether it's natural electrolytes, like adding a little diluted coconut water or a pinch of Himalayan sea salt, or we use a company that, you know, doesn't have a lot of crap in it, that tends to make you feel hydrated without having to consume copious amounts of water.
That's a really good tip.
I get water delivery from like Poland Spring or whatever I get. Is that not healthy because it comes in those huge plastic gallons?
I mean, it's probably better than drinking unfiltered like well water.
Wait, so what would be your ultimate best water situation? My yoga studio has this like triple filtered like hydros. Yeah. I don't even know what it is, but it's amazing. I want that.
I have a reverse osmosis system with a remineralizer, which isn't as expensive as you think because it's just under my sink. So we just use it for drinking and cooking water. It's like a couple $100. And we have a well, so we get it tested once a year for bacteria and things like that. But, you know, we know that we're not getting it because we have this reverse osmosis. And then it has a remineralizer on it because reverse osmosis removes everything. So we want to put the minerals back in. Berkey is a good option. And they actually make over-the-counter, like almost like a Brita reverse osmosis system now. So that's a good one. And I think it's the best tasting water. Like my friends like always fill up their water bottles before they leave my house.
It's like your party favor.
Right. Like we just you gotta go.
You gotta go over there and get your water bean.
Yeah,
right. I know. I might come over with a couple jugs, not plastic.
Go for it.
Well, and also change that filter. I feel like sometimes you put the thing in and you think you can set it and forget it, but you have to change your water filter for it to have the effect. Yeah. Wait,
I think we got off track. No,
we got off track. Sleep, right? We got sleep as one.
We were asking for three of like your biggest, if you could walk away with any three of your biggest. Sleep is number one.
Sleep is one, or in the top three at least. Exercise. We have to move our body.
I failed. I'm out. The checklist is over.
Yeah. So, I mean, and there's two ways to go about this. I think getting those activities of daily living, just steps, movement, standing desk, walking around, doing little exercise snacks every hour, doing 10 squats, things like that.
Oh, I thought you meant exercise to go get a snack. Love
you
that.
You could do that too. Yes.
Jumping jacks breaking to up the exercise.
Yeah. I like that. That works. We got to move our bodies. The second piece is strength, especially as women. We need to lift heavy things. We need to do so safely, but we need to progressively lift heavy things in order to not only stay mobile as we age, which is a real concern for women with osteoporosis and arthritis, which is higher in us than men.
Yeah.
But also to stay metabolically healthy. We know that muscle is an endocrine organ, and the more healthy muscle we have on board, the more metabolically fit we're going to be. You know, the less diabetes we're going to have, the less insulin resistance, the less fatty liver, the less weight we're going to put on. So exercise is like a non-negotiable. We have to do it.
You heard that, Bean? It's a non-negotiable.
I hear it. I don't want to strength train.
No, I do want to strength train. I just don't even know what to do. I just like my yoga and like going for walks. I'm like a real 42-year-old woman. A good walk always does it for me.
I think nothing is not made better by a walk. There are very few things that don't get better with you have a walk. I feel the same way about a hot shower or a tub too.
Oh, nice.
But
and at least you're moving your body, and I'm sure it helps prepare a sympathetic nervous system.
For sure.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay.
And so you can start slow. Start with body weights. Start with bands. You don't have to go to.
That's why I love Lauren. She is always makes everything so approachable. You never have, even when I got off gluten, when I lived on gluten, you were like, just start for a couple weeks. I was like, okay, I could do it a few weeks. And then I did it. You were like, if you feel okay, why don't you do it a little bit more? I was like, okay, I will. It's like baby steps for adults.
It is. I think that's one of the things that I really pride myself on is trying to meet the person where they are.
Yes.
And you really have to, and that's where that patient-provider relationship comes in. Like you have to get to know the person.
Yeah. Right.
And I think you need experience too. But, you know, I could come in hot and give you 20 things to do, an elimination diet, and you do that. But if you're not ready for that.
Yeah. You won't receive it.
Exactly. So you have to meet the person where they're at and give them and see. And I over time, and I think it's probably just years of practice, I've kind of gotten pretty good at being like, okay, they're ready for some baby steps.
Yeah.
This person's ready for something bigger.
Yeah.
And trying to do that.
It's awesome.
All right. So sleep, exercise, what's your third?
Oh, right.
Yeah. So I think nutrition, obviously. A couple pieces of this. I think everyone in their lifetime should do an elimination diet at some point. Unless you have like a history of a severe eating disorder or something like that, where we want to be super mindful. But I think it's helpful to see if you're reacting to any foods. It's also a treatment in that process too, because you're avoiding foods that typically aren't great for you and putting in really healthy foods.
Right.
And it forces you to be super mindful.
If you were going to start an elimination diet, what would you recommend people start eliminating?
So the standard elimination diet is gluten, dairy, corn, soy, eggs, and peanuts.
All at once? Ooh.
Yeah, for 30 days.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
For how long?
So that's a big ask for 30 days. And then you reintroduce them one at a time. So I would say if you're going to try something, I find in my patients, usually it's gluten or dairy are the top issues.
Yeah.
So I would start with one of them.
I see. Yeah, I could see doing gluten and dairy. I think when you get into corn and eggs, it's like, no, it starts to really limit your...
Yeah.
What you can eat. And I think the other thing for me that I'm always mindful of is like cultural foods and what is important to keep in mind. Like I'm Persian and I know during the whole carb craze, it was like rice was evil. And I'm like, duh, that's all we eat is rice. Yeah. So I think it's also, I wonder, you know, how does that play into an elimination diet when if for culturally sure. like, you know, that's one of the foods that is in your, you know, ingredients.
I run into that a lot. And that's why it has to be individual care. It can't just be a blanket. I don't do blanket protocols because people are not protocols. They're individual. They have individual. Yeah. And I actually have a lot of patients who practice fasting because of their religion or have to avoid certain things during certain times of the year.
Yeah.
And you really have to, you know, get creative and you have to troubleshoot. And I like that challenge of it, but you have to do an individual approach because it's not going to work. It doesn't work if you don't.
Totally. Yeah. My son's in a phase right now where he's quote, only eating halal. By the way, we're not Muslim, but he has decided.
Oh, right. When I was there.
Eating halal. Yeah. And the other day he was eating a pepperoni pizza and I was like, that's pork, which is not halal. And he's like, it's okay today. I'm like, oh, okay. You're choosing your,
I like his halal diet.
That's awesome.
Lauren,
can I ask you, wait, Bean, you said you had two questions. Did you have another one before I get to the final question that I have?
No, I forget because I brain
fog. Okay. I want to know, what are you excited about in terms of where our collective consciousness is going with functional medicine and integrative medicine? Like, what are you seeing happening for us as people based on accepting more of this integrative approach?
Yeah. I think two things. I think one, there's been a huge cultural shift in patient advocacy, in researching for yourself, in asking about other options, in getting full informed consent of what your options are. That's been a big shift. I remember when I first started in functional medicine, I used to have like a little elevator speech that I used to give all the time because no one knew what the hell it was.
Right.
Even when I first became a nurse practitioner, I used to have to explain what that was. And then, you know, a couple years later, everyone knew what that was.
Right.
And then, you know, when functional medicine, it was like, okay, I have to explain this all the time. And now people totally know what it is. So there's definitely a huge awareness there, which is pretty cool to see. So I think the patient self-advocacy is huge. I love that. The other piece I'm really excited about and I'm really into right now is peri and postmenopausal care.
Yes.
We need a whole episode on that.
Yes, because I wanted to ask you about that.
Yes.
Good. Yeah. So I actually, I'm a member of the Menopause Society. I'm taking my test to be a certified practitioner at the end of this month. So I'm deep into studying, which is fun for me. I haven't done that in a long time. So I'm really excited about having options and information and accessibility for women in the second stage of life where we've been freaking ignored and lied to pretty much.
Well, what's the stat? Do you know, Lauren, the stat in terms of funding for medical research for women versus men?
Oh, it's ridiculous. And it's women like aren't 5%
even 5% in comparison. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're not small men. So what you know, has been done historically is that we're just, they just include men in clinical trials because they don't have to account for hormonal cycles and things like that. And they're just like, oh, we'll just apply it. Women are small men. We'll just apply the same things. And that's not true. And we know that now. And, you know, things like statins don't affect women the same way. And we just don't have data on women themselves. And that's starting to shift slowly, but shifting nonetheless.
And it's such a huge hormonal, like during your pregnancy, you are completely supported. You're being seen every minute because your hormones are going here and there. And then perimenopause comes and everyone's like, no one even talks about it. Yeah. I even talked to my gyno who was lovely and said, I think I'm perimenopausal. And he goes, you are. And I was like, okay, that was
now
sort
what?
Of it.
Now what? Yeah. Like, could you have some guidance? Can you tell me what's going to happen? Can we have a conversation what my options are? Right. Like, how is this going to affect me?
Well, they don't know. That's the problem.
Well, now she knows.
Yeah, I was going to say, and it's not because the information's not there. The information's there. We know what estrogen does and how that affects us systemically, not just hot flashes and night sweats. I mean, we know it affects our joints and it affects our brain and it affects our GI system or GU system and it affects our sex drive. I mean, it affects everything. Part of our body. Exactly. Exactly.
Thank God I have you to support me through this.
Oh,
I'm so happy for you, Bean. And then you can just give me the information Lauren gave you.
For sure. We'll just pass it along. Love it. Love it.
I'll have her do an email format so I can forward it along.
So you can just forward it along. Yeah.
Lauren, if our listeners are interested in learning more from you, where might they find you?
Sure. So I think I have an Instagram, although I'm not very active on that. So I'm very lucky that my practice is pretty much all word of mouth and referrals, which is great. So I have a practice in New Hope, Pennsylvania. Woo-hoo. So my website is centralbucksim.com, and that's the best way to kind of connect. My email's on there. My admin's email's on there.
Great.
And you do a lot of virtual appointments.
I do. If someone lives in Pennsylvania, I can see them virtually. If you're in another state, they have to come in person for the initial visit.
Oh, wow.
So if you're in another state, look for a good functional medicine
doctor. Yeah, and there are two websites that are helpful.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so IFM. Yeah, the IFM, which is Institute of Functional Medicine, where I've done a lot of training, they have a Find a Practitioner website.
Oh, that's great.
And you can search by zip code. And then actually the fellowship, the University of Arizona Weill Integrative Center has a Find a Practitioner link as well.
Okay. Oh,
wow. And then so does the Menopause Society.
We will pop those two links in our show notes for you listeners in case you want to include this, which I couldn't recommend more highly. I think Melissa has more experience with, you know, seeing you, Lauren. But even for me, seeing my functional medicine doctor and just the supplements she's added in, you know, and making sure the D vitamins are at the right, like I feel more energetic and less lethargic than ever before. Yeah. And she solved it for me. It wasn't going to my general practitioner that did it. So I highly recommend including something like this into your overall health system for sure. Lauren, thank you for taking the time with us today. This was so informative. I feel like we got a lot of tangible takeaway tools, as Melissa likes to say.
Exactly right.
So thank you so much. And guys, thank you for listening. We will be back again next week with another episode of Signal. See you then. Bye.
Bye.
This has been another episode of Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. This podcast is co-hosted and produced by myself, Maury Fontanez, and Melissa Bushka, and is edited by our sound editor, Josie Barak. Stay tuned next week for another episode.